When I was in horseback, wasn't I pretty? When I was in horseback, wasn't I gay? Oh, but wasn't I pretty? When I entered Clark City, when I met with me downfall on the 14th of May.
Hello there, and welcome to episode 6 of the second series of the Old Songs podcast with me, John Wilkes. Well, we last had Debbie Armour of Bird Ellen on the Old Songs podcast in episode 11 of the first series, chatting about Lord Gregory. I've had so much amazing feedback about that conversation since then that I've been biding my time, waiting for the right moment to get her back on. And with their new album, A Tarot of the Greenwood, out in recent weeks, now seemed like an excellent opportunity. Her chosen song is Roud 2, When I Was on Horseback. You've just heard the great Mary Doran singing a version collected by the BBC in the 50s. It's a song known also as The Unfortunate Lad or Lass, or a whole host of other titles. A caution to all listeners before we dive in, however, it is a very grisly song, certainly not one for the faint of heart. You'll see, I did warn you. Thanks, of course, also to the English Folk Dance and Song Society, who support this podcast. An episode like this about a song with so many variants is not possible without the archive material that they lovingly curate. I often get emails asking me where I find the information, or indeed how people can look for traditional songs that were collected locally to them. And the answer is really simple. It's all there at Cecil Sharp House in Camden in North London. And if you can't get there personally, you can do searches on the vwml.org website. That's the website of the Vaughan Williams Memorial Library, housed at Cecil Sharp House. And on the accompanying site, efdss.org, you'll find tons of educational material on all things folk traditions. It's really a wealth of stuff that you could lose yourself in for days, weeks, or in my case, years. So, take a look. Get the bug. But back to Debbie, sitting there up on horseback. Have a listen to this.
Six jolly soldiers to carry my coffin. Six jolly soldiers to march by my side. And let each and them for to smell them as we go along.
So welcome, Debbie, back to the Old Songs podcast. It's been a very long time, hasn't it, since we last spoke? I think you've been away having a baby, amongst other things.
Yeah, I have. I've had a baby, which is, time-consuming. Fair eats your day.
And in amongst having a baby, you've also made a record, which is quite a feat to have a little baby and make a record. How did you manage that?
Well, she's on the record is how I managed that. she's in one of the loops. I just took her with me. Yeah, I just took her with me. She was about, I think, 12 weeks old. And we just all went to the studio together and took a kind of languorously long time. Well, 3 days, but to Gail and I, that's a languorously long time to make an album together, and just did it at the baby's pace.
She's the producer, effectively.
She's the artistic director, yeah. Dictated the tone of a lot of the vocal, for sure.
And how's the album gone? It's been received very well, I think.
It's been really brilliant, yeah. It always surprises me when anyone wants to listen to our records. And every time I make a new one, I think, oh, this is going to be the one. this is going to be the one that absolutely nobody wants to listen to. But each time it turns out actually people do want to listen to, and slightly more people than last time, which is also gratifying on a like-for-like basis.
Is it possible to tour with a, well, I was going to say a newborn, but she can't be that newborn anymore, can she?
No, she's going to be one on Christmas Eve.
Wow, much less newborn than I realised.
Yeah. She's been kicking about for a while. It is difficult to tour with a baby, which is why we've done no touring this year. That actually wasn't intentional. There's been a lot of chaos this year. I'm sure that everyone else that you've had on the podcast will be able to share tales of woe of trying to tour this year. In many, many ways, this year has been the worst year of the pandemic for me in terms of getting things done out of the house. Like it's just all super shonky still, except nobody's talking about it now. Do you know, like, you're still having to like cancel a lot of shows and lose a lot of work specifically because of COVID, like specifically, and not just like all of the kind of adjacent issues. So yeah, it's been quite challenging, but we'll be touring next year, and I'm going to get around to having a baby by also having a husband, and we're going to do the family tour thing.
Well, from very happy baby stuff to this song, which you've chosen.
And of course it's grim, because it's my favourite.
Is this your favourite, or is it just that grim is your favourite?
Grim is my favourite. It's my favourite Steel Eye Span song.
Right, okay. I was going to say its name, but it's got so many.
So many.
It might be easier just to call it Roud 2.
I think so, yeah. And I mean, there's a multiplicity of things collected under the Roud 2 umbrella that I would not necessarily have grouped together myself. I feel like there's some subdivisions even within that division itself.
Well, we'll get onto that definitely, but let's give it a go in terms of some of the names. Give me some of the names that you've got.
When I Was on Horseback, and I think it's also called St. Jane's Infirmary or Locke's Infirmary as well, I think sometimes I've seen in the Bodleian. The Unfortunate Soldier, it's sometimes called that. It's called bunches of things.
I've got a bunch here. Young Sailor, Trooper Cut Down in His Prime.
Yes.
Young Girl Cut Down in a Prime.
Yes, that's an interesting aspect of the song, actually.
The Unfortunate Lass.
Hmm.
Bad Girl, which sounds like a Katy Perry song. And then The Unfortunate Rake, which, again, I'm sure we're going to come back to soon. St. James's Hospital. Dying Crapshooter's Blues. The Dying Soldier, The Royal Albert, The Buck's Elegy. I'm done.
The Buck's Elegy, The Dying Crapshooter's Blues. That's new to me.
Yeah.
That's new to me. That's glorious. Isn't that wonderful?
You'll need to go back and redo your album.
Yep, I'm going to do an album exclusively of versions of The Dying Crapshooter's Blues.
You joke about that, but you know it's been done.
I don't doubt it for a second.
There is an album that was released on Folkways Records called The Unfortunate Rake, A Study in the Evolution of a Ballad, which has got like 15 or 16 different versions of this song on it.
Folkways is brilliant for stuff like that.
It is, isn't it? And in the notes, it describes this song as a classroom device for explaining the process of tradition.
Huh.
So I think you've hit on the motherlode here.
Well, see, it's interesting to me because I think in the instance of this song, as well as in another song that I sing actually called Fair Annie, which is described in mainly Norfolk as having elements from, like, no joke, like 9 different child numbers. Oh, it's a bit of child this, it's a bit of child that. And I'm like, well, maybe then it oughtn't to be described as such, right? Maybe then it ought to be the same thing. And I feel like there's lots of versions of this song, Roud 2, that I'm like, well, are they all Roud 2? Is there like a Roud 2.7? Because I would like that. Roud 2.63 Mark 9. I would like that. You know, there's quite a lot of variety, I would say. There's some golf course bits. I'm sure we've talked about that before. The golf course approach to traditional song.
Go on, tell me about that again.
when you treat a song like a golf course, right? So you've got nine holes, or like X number of plot points that are contained within it and that are universal to every version. But how you get there is different every time you go and play the golf, right? So there's lots of different verses or versions, or in this case, genders or occupations or locations, or, do you know, but like they're all, it's all the same golf course. It's just different rounds of golf.
That's brilliant. It does have a lot of occupations, doesn't it? I mean, obviously you've got soldiers and troopers and all sorts of different people, crap shooters, whatever that is.
It's a dice game. It's a dice game.
Okay. Yeah. So you've got all these different versions. There's even a website that I found earlier that lists all the different careers that are involved in this song. It's clearly something that a lot of geeks have spent a lot of time on.
Gosh, that's funny.
When I was on horseback, wasn't I pretty? When I was on a
I find the kind of ubiquity of it quite interesting, because it's not an easy subject. I feel like we're being very oblique here.
Why don't you tell us the story, if you would like to? You chose it.
Well, sure. I mean, it depends on which version you have, right? So, for example, in the way that I sing it, the way that I know it, is very kind of blank, right? It's a dead soldier who is saying, when I was alive and when I was on this horse, wasn't I like the most beautiful thing? Wasn't I nice to see? Wasn't I pretty? Then it just describes the funeral procession, the bonny soldiers who all have roses, which we'll come back to, and the pipes and the drums, or the fifes and the drums, depending. And then it closes with, I am a poor soldier that's never done wrong. So take me back to Tipperary, ask for his body to be reinterred in Tipperary, and, you know, he's a poor soldier, and that's it, right? But if you get into the kind of other versions, what you find out is that he's died of a communicable disease, a romantical communicable disease.
That's the first time I've heard it described in that way.
Yeah, he's been fraternizing with some young woman and has unfortunately done for himself. And so that's quite a niche, I would say, experience to, maybe it's not niche, it's a very, very specific experience, right, that it's describing. It's describing being a young soldier or a young sailor or a young crapshooter, right, whatever you want to be, a young man. Cut down in your prime by your own folly,
yeah.
In matters of the bedroom, right? Or in some versions, he says, "Oh, if only my friends had told me that she had the clap, then I wouldn't have gone there." And I'm like, "Well, you know, how are they going to know? Everyone who's been with her's dead." So anyway, it's quite niche.
But you say it's niche, and here we come with a. Can't believe I'm going to say this. Here I come with some fun venereal disease facts for you.
Fantastic.
During the First World War, Debbie.
Yes.
Venereal disease caused 416,891 hospital admissions among British troops. Excluding readmissions for relapses, that meant that roughly 5% of all the men enlisted in the British Army during the First World War were infected.
Yikes.
So not that niche at all. And if you're all singing the songs in the trenches, if it's the soldier version of the song that you've picked up on, then it might be something of a warning song to all.
Well, right. So it's like a public health announcement, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really.
Effectively.
It's a public health situation. But what's further interesting is the way that the song is gender flipped, because there's lots and lots of versions where the protagonist is in fact a young woman who dies of an adrenal disease, which again is a public health warning, but she also has lots of other like personality flaws. She's like a bit of a fallen woman, right? Related, I think. I don't know, is this like officially related to Katie Krull? Is Katie Krull listed as an official variant of this song?
I hadn't thought of that, and I haven't seen that written down, but I could totally see why it might be.
I mean, I feel like it must be.
When I first came to town, called me the rolling dune. Now they changed their tune, call me Katie Krull.
I haven't just come upon that thought. That's a thought that I've always had. I'm just about to look it up, actually, doing my homework on the fly. But yeah, like, it's not very often that you'll have a song that is so kind of neatly gender flipped like that. Let's see. Oh, okay. So Katie Krull is listed as Roud 1645, which is the same as another song called The Lichtbob's Lassie, which I know. A lichtbob is a lamplighter.
Okay.
He's a guy, so...
It's like going down the job centre with this song, isn't it?
Yeah, the woman in the song, they call her the Lichtbob's Lassie, right? So she's like the one that sleeps with all the guys that are the lamplighters. I'm surprised that this one's got a separate Roud number and others that are under this Roud number don't.
Isn't the connection that you're making really there just that it's a song about, as you said, a fallen woman? There must be a number of songs about a fallen woman, mustn't there?
Yeah, but there's something very St. James Infirmary about it. Do you know? And see, if you said, if you're to ask me, is Katie Krull and St. James Infirmary the same Roud number, or is When I Was on Horseback and St. James Infirmary the same Roud number, I would say Katie Krull and St. James Infirmary rather than...
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I certainly do.
But I uncharacteristically shied away from the true horror and gone for a more oblique version because it suited my needs.
The true horror version of this song is really quite horrific, isn't it? So it's like, you know, there are versions of this song in which, you know, people are sort of wandering through Covent Garden with open sores and festering wounds and at the end of it wants to have roses and things because the smell of their body is going to be too much for everybody else.
Yeah, that's where that little line comes from. And When I Was on Horseback, it says, six bonny soldiers to carry my coffin, six bonny soldiers to march by my side, and if six bonny soldiers take a bunch of red roses, then for to smell them as we go along, right? And it sounds very like, it's like a really beautiful kind of romantic, gentle image, quite a homoerotic image, actually, I think, but that's maybe a different podcast. This like really kind of amazing sensual image of this sort of resplendent death. But actually, yeah, you're correct. The reason that people at the funerals of those who have died from this particular disease would have posies and roses is because the bodies were like rank putrescent even before death. Upsetting. See, and now it becomes crystal clear why I've preferred to go for the oblique version and focused on the death rather than the manner of, you see.
Yeah.
It's much neater.
A lot less mess.
Yes.
Get six of my comrades to carry my coffin. Get six pretty girls for to sing me a song. And each of them carry a bunch of white laurel, that they may not smell me as we march along.
Do you know anything about St. James's Hospital itself or St. James's Infirmary? Because that turns up in these songs.
No, I don't actually. I just assumed that it was like a kind of generic made up thing.
It's not, it seems. You know, while you were just trying to find your headphones, I was doing some last minute research and this fell into my lap. So I've yet to sort of verify it, but it came from a fairly well-established website and thoroughly checked website, let's say. And it said that St. James's Hospital was actually a leper colony founded by the Citizens of London in 1189. and it was named after St. James the Less, who was the Bishop of Jerusalem. And 160 acres were bequeathed to the hospice before Henry VIII confiscated it all in 1531 to build his own deer park. And he built a hunting lodge there, which was finished in 1536.
You are joking.
Which became the beginning of St. James's Palace and is now St. James Park in London.
No way. That is such a cool fact.
It's a pretty good one, isn't it?
That's like the Tudor equivalent of doing that Stephen King thing where you put your house on the old Indian burial ground.
It's classic dastardly behaviour from Henry VIII.
He was not a great guy, huh?
He wasn't wonderful. There's a National Trust place near where I live here in Hampshire, where they've got a big deer park that was built by Henry VIII. And he was too big to go out and actually hunt the deer. So he would send people out to go and do the hunting of the deer for him. And then they'd bring the sort of moribund deer back to the palace where he would administer the final death blow and claim the kill for himself.
God. Well, get this. There's a new St. James Infirmary. It's a peer-based occupational health centre that serves transgender people, and transgender people involved specifically in sex work in San Francisco. How cool is that? It fills a gap in homelessness services that has excluded a really vulnerable population. St. James's Infirmary lives on.
Yeah, long and varied history.
When I was a young girl, I used to seek pleasure. When I was a young girl, I used to drink ale. Right out of an alehouse, down into the jailhouse. Then to the whorehouse, and now to my grave.
What do you know about the collecting of this song? Like, where does it come from? I mean, again, I'm really conscious of the fact that we are essentially talking about what seems like to be two different songs here and sort of kind of pretending that they're both the same thing.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like that's true. I think it's true to say. My version is Irish, right?
Right, okay.
So when I was on horseback, wasn't I pretty? When I was on horseback, wasn't I gay? Wasn't I pretty? When I entered Cork City, met with my downfall on the 14th of May. I think the 14th of May is actually some sort of significant military event. So the version that I know is Irish. It comes from the singing of the great Mary Doran.
Mm. Do you remember when you first heard that?
Oh, I heard the Steel Eyes Band version first.
Right, okay.
Like a long time ago. A long, long time ago. I heard it, obviously, like I heard a lot of traditional music when I was a child, but as a teenager, it might have been one of the first things that made me go, oh, what's that?
Mm. Mm.
It's been with me a long, long time because it's quite weird. Their version's quite weird.
Does Steel Eyes Band get their version from Mary Doran? Is it the same
version?
Yes,
it's the same. It's exactly the same. All the versions of St. James, all the versions of Round 2 that are when I was on horseback can all basically be traced back to Mary Doran. Yeah.
Mm.
Mary Doran of County Waterford, 1952, she was collected by the BBC.
As you would imagine with a song of this many variants and versions, it does seem to have gone absolutely everywhere.
Yeah, to the point where I don't know where it started. It's very popular in America anyway, St. James Infirmary. It's very popular in the old-timey kind of American tradition, and their version is quite complete. But there's Scottish and English versions of it as well. So it's impossible to know. It's like one of these ones that bounces backwards and forwards over the Atlantic as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ireland, Scotland, England, Canada, and obviously America as well. 299 results on the Vaughan Williams Memorial Library Archive website.
Yeah. I had a look and was like, oh.
This could take some time.
There's 299 here. And I don't know which of them is interesting. Because, you know, it's always great to go and have a look. Because the Roud Index is so comprehensive, right, there's usually something. It's a really great archive. And, you know, there's usually like a kind of obscure bit of text or like a journal, like, or a version that's been printed in like the Folk Song Society from 1922 or something like that. You know, there's always something juicy in there, but there is very rarely 300 records to wade through in order to find that when you already have a good version.
The trials and tribulations of being a modern traditional folk singer. Huh? Too much choice.
Right, too much information. Yeah, it's difficult to know where it started, but if it helps, Katie Krull is considered to be a variant of the Lichtbob's Lassie, which I think belongs firmly in this song family, actually, which is Scottish. So, I don't know. I'm not saying it's ours, but maybe we'll just claim it if no one else wants it.
I think plenty of people want Katie Krull. It's a pretty popular one.
Yeah.
As we've just said, it's two songs, in effect, or in the way that we're talking about it, seems to be pre- and post-mortem songs. The version that I know better is the version in which this poor, unfortunate rake goes wandering and pussing and oozing all over London and stinking the place up. And it's that one that I found more information on in terms of where it came from. And as you say, 299 is a lot to wade through. Steve Roud has written, despite the number and variety of collected versions, the early history of the song is still unclear, and surprisingly few 19th century broadside copies have survived. He goes on to state that the song probably dates from 1740 or earlier, but at present we have no evidence to support such a theory. That's under the title The Buck's Elegy. He says the earliest known variant is a late 18th century, early 19th century broadside that's kept in the Madden collection and is called The Buck's Elegy. This is the lament of a young man about town set in Covent Garden, a well-known haunt of London sex workers. Mm-hmm. The moribund young man bewails the fact that he did not know what was wrong with him in time, in which case he could have taken mercury to treat the ailment, and he makes requests about his funeral. This version includes what Bishop and Roud refer to as the explicit clues that the persona has a sexually transmitted disease in the form of references to mercury and other treatments for that disease. All of which is to say, 1740 is the earliest one that they've managed to find of this version.
Yeah, and the versions that are in the Bodleian are all pretty much exactly the same song.
Are they? They don't change much.
Yeah, no, they're all the unfortunate something. And the words are basically exactly the same. The variation of it seems to be when it's travelled. The change in the occupation from rake, gadabout, fancy guy.
Is that like a modern day influencer?
Yeah, one of the pop stars of the day. A Byron type. I live in Byron country now.
Do you?
Yeah, he's buried in the graveyard of the church on the High Street in the town where I live. Ada Lovelace as well. And then his dog is buried out in Newstead Abbey, which was his house, which is like 4 minutes away from me on the train. And where his dog is buried is like much nicer. And his dog has this like big fancy, like urn type tomb kind of thing. It's like 7 feet tall. So anyway, I'm obsessed with Byron. I'm finding out a lot about Byron. So yeah, let's call him a Byron type. And I think the change in that occupation between him and like a sailor or a soldier, it just absolutely smacks to me of like an intentional, actual public health messaging. Do you know what I mean? Like somebody's kind of deliberately planted that idea amongst the soldiers and the sailors to try and stop them all from killing themselves off.
It's not unusual to find songs like this, as you say, cautionary tales, songs that were very specifically written. I remember reading about the Wild Rover, that it was a similar sort of situation where somebody said, we need to write a song like this to stop people drinking so much.
Yeah, it's the temperance movement. Yeah, I think Ian Lynch did a podcast all about that. Actually.
Oh, really?
If anybody's curious about the history of the Wild Rover, it's absolutely fascinating. Ian Lynch has done a 2-part podcast on it under his Fire Draw Near podcast moniker.
Yes.
Ian Lynch of Lancome fame, because obviously they've done the last truly great version of the Wild Rover. And he kens a thing or three about traditional songs. But yeah, I think you're right. I think it was specifically written by the temperance movement.
And whereas this one doesn't feel like it was necessarily specifically written, but as you say, adaptable. You know, insert your own profession or union here.
Yeah, so you've got all these young men that are away from home for the first time, and you would prefer it if they died on your clock and not their own.
I went down to St. James Infirmary, saw my baby there, stretched out on a long white table, so sweet, so cold, so fair.
Do you know much about the song when it goes off into being American? So there are these links, aren't there, that supposedly between this song and St. James Infirmary Blues. Have you picked up on any of that?
It's, to me, obviously the same song. I imagine that it went there the way that everything else went there, migration.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The fact that it's in Canada as well would suggest that it's not just Irish migration, it's probably Scottish. But yeah, I mean, it's highly likely to be Scottish and Irish migration. When is St. James Infirmary Blues? 1928. It's sometimes said to be based on an 18th century folk song called The Unfortunate Rake. I mean, sometimes, all the time, I would say.
I think St. James Infirmary Blues is sometimes thought to be a traditional song and sometimes thought to be something that's very specifically written around the 1920s. Mm. And there are lots of sort of people who argue for and against the fact that it could be the same song. But as you say, it does seem to me like a fairly obvious thing. Just some notes on it here. St. James Infirmary Blues chronicles an amoral life gone wrong. The most famous interpretation was done by Blind Willie McTell, but it's based around the specific life, the life of a crooked gambler, Jesse Williams.
I mean, no, it isn't.
The people who sort of argue for it being exactly the same song, or at least a variant of the song, point to that verse that you've just mentioned as well, which is the verse regarding the people who carry the coffin at the funeral. In the St. James Infirmary Blues version, they want six crapshooters to be my pallbearers.
Okay, but it's probably not. I mean, it could not be the same song, right? He could just have written that. <Kids piece.
laughs> He could just...
He could just spontaneously sat up in bed one night and like, what if I had like six people who have the same job as me to carry my fictional coffin? How would that look? What a stunning original thought. Anyway.
But there we go into another song though, because that just jumps into my head now. And I don't know why I hadn't thought about this before, but do you know the song The Flash Lad, sometimes called Adieu, Adieu, which was the way that the Watersons recorded it?
Oh, yeah.
The Tale of a Highwayman.
Oh, yes.
That ends with this verse. What did it go like? Six blooming maids to bear up my pall. And when I'm dead and going to my grave, pleasant funeral, pray let me have.
Yeah.
Six highwaymen to carry me, give them broadswords and sweet liberty.
Yes.
Six blooming girls to bear up my pall, give them white gloves and pink ribbons all. So unless having six of everything was quite a common thing at these funerals, it seems to me that we've got a floating verse here, Debbie.
That's definitely a floating verse, because I also know that song as Wild and Undaunted Youth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There goes a wild and undaunted youth.
That's the same song, isn't it? See, now that's Roud 30101. So yeah, but I mean, like, the only similarity is that verse. When I'm dead and go to my grave, a flashy funeral, let me... Wait, hang on. Is the Wild and Undaunted Youth not also, does the robbery, the central robbery that he gets hung for, not take place in Covent Garden?
It does, yes. A hotspot for folk song activity, Covent Garden.
That's actually a really good song. I really hope somebody does that on your podcast. Just saying.
Yeah, no, it's a good idea. I've recorded it myself in the past, so.
All right.
Maybe I'll do it.
You should do it.
It's about time we turn the tables and I get to talk about a song.
You should. That'd be really fun.
And when I'm dead and going to my grave, no costly tombstone will I crave. Six bonny lasses to carry my pall. Give them broadswords, gloves and ribbons all. Which makes me now to lament and say, pity the fate of young felons all. Willow Day, Willow Day.
let's go back to your first hearing of it. So you heard Steel Eye Span originally.
Mm-hmm. I think my dad had it on record.
And did that lead you to start looking for the Mary Doran version?
No, I started looking for the Mary Doran version when I, well, I wasn't even looking for the Mary Doran version. I just started finding out about it when I decided to sing it for realsies. Actually, I decided that I wanted to sing it in like 2019, but I only found a home for it on this record.
What makes you want to sing a song like this? Like when you say, I decided to sing it in 2019, what grabs you about a song like this?
The tune of this one. I love the tune. It's so weird. It's got so many like unexpected bits in it. It doesn't want to stay in the one mode. It's a really weird tune, which is my best and favourite. That whole album's full of quite weird tunes. In fact, I used the tune of Lizzie Wan that Nick talked about in the first episode of this season of your great podcast. Also, Nick talked about how great the tune is, and that's exactly why I wanted it. So I used the tune, in other words. But yeah, it was the melody of this, and I was struggling, but curious to find that it didn't sit happily in a drone, because I was just doing loads and loads and loads of singing against my harmonium. I was just finding that like a really satisfying kind of exploratory process, and it doesn't sit particularly happily in that kind of space. And I was like, oh, that's cool. How can I exploit this weirdness further? How can I set it? And then I made a little loop of me singing bits of it with a kind of shifting fourth and fifth. I made that loop in 2019 and then reversed one layer of it. And then that's the thing that's on the album.
Is that the loop with your daughter in it?
No, that's not the loop. She wasn't born yet. She wasn't even thought of. No, she's in the loop on the Hermit. She was strapped to my front while I was trying to do, oh God, anyway, quite stressful. I had to do the loop quite a few times because we kept like going back out into the control room and playing it back and going, nope, that's the baby. And her music's quite weird anyway. And it's like, no, is that a noise that Gail is making? Or is that, no, that's the baby. That's a squawk. That's a squawking sound. That's the sound of the baby. No, I had that loop kicking around on my little Boss loop pedal, like my single channel one, and was like, oh, why don't we do this? That would rule the full school and all the schools in the surrounding district.
Tell us a little about the nature of the title that you gave it, because when you're using this song, it's called The Chariot, which takes on part of the theme of the album Tarot of the Greenwood.
Yeah, so I marched in to Residency and was like, here, listen, we're going to do this really weird album. It's all about tarot cards because I really like them. So we've made an album that looks at the parallels between the interpretation of traditional song and the art of divination, specifically via tarot cards. So we were like, what happens if you treat the song like an object, right? What if you imagine that it's an object, like a card, right? And what are we doing when we pick up that object and apply it to our lives, right? The way that you would do like a tarot reading. you know, it's not giving you any information that you don't already have, but it's a tool for exploring things like archetypes, right? There's lots of lovely archetypes in this song. And it's a tool for exploring your own ideas through a framework that's immediately recognizable to other people, right? In much the same way as a deck of tarot cards is. So I thought that was a really neat idea. I chose the Chariot for this song because the image on the Chariot card is a soldier on a chariot with a horse. And it's about like pride, achievement, and celebrating yourself, I guess. And I thought that was quite an interesting lens through which to view this text. And it divorces it quite a bit, actually, from the fuller version of the song and treats it very much as its own thing, right? Kind of almost removes it from the song family a little bit if you look at the themes a different way and take it at face value rather than digging around to find out what is it actually about, right? And I think that there's a lot of really nice songs like that that I sing. I really enjoy that. I really enjoy that kind of open-ended, quite blank way of engaging with the text. Like there's another Irish song I sing called The Well Below the Valley, which is a very kind of open and flat and oblique version of The Maid in the Palmer, which is a quite disturbing song. You know, it's quite a troubling song and not a song that I would actually want to sing. I find that singing The Well Below the Valley just like opens it up into this whole different realm. It becomes something else and it becomes much more open to interpretation. Still sinister as all get out. Otherwise, I wouldn't be interested. But sinister in a way that allows you to populate it with your own sinister ideas, which are obviously always much more frightening. But yeah, I liked the blankness of it. And in this album, I've achieved that blankness by, in some cases, truncating and abbreviating the songs quite a lot, just taking out a lot of identifying detail and a lot of narrative detail and just leaving what I think are the key ideas.
How does a concept like that come to you? Like,
I was reading about object-oriented ontology.
Of course you were.
Object-oriented ontology is the idea that objects exist in three different ways, right? There's the object in science, the object in art, and then crucially, the object in and of itself. So the object has its own interior. The object has its own existence outside of your observation, either as a scientist, a dispassionate observer, or as an artist and engaging with the object in that way. The object has its own life outside of your will for it to exist, right? And I find that idea super applicable to traditional song. That's where I kind of got the little like crack into, well, what happens if we do imagine that the song is an object? Isn't that a fun thought to entertain? What does it mean? What does it do? How does it function as an object? And what is its interiority? What are we talking about when we think about that? Like, what is its inside life? And its inside life is enormous outside of you. It will continue to rumble on whether you like it or not, you know?
Mm.
I enjoy that idea very much.
Yeah, that's great. What's the inside life of this particular song? Or are you saying that the inherent songness is what is the interior life?
Yeah. So it's part of the tradition, right? Capital letters. You know, you can also treat the tradition as an object. It's maybe more useful to think about it like that, right? It's part of this like great like river of idea, this current of notion that has its own kind of like intelligence, its own like sort of broadcasting intelligence that you are only very briefly dipping your cup into, right? You're engaging with it on your own terms, but in terms of the life of this song, so how old is this song? What did we work out there? This song's like nearly 300 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my engagement with it, my kind of like blanking out of it, my like flattening it into a two-dimensional card, my making it into like a sort of archetype or a sticker or like a window for your own ideas is like a tiny, tiny blip in the 300-year history of this song, and it will continue on for another 300 years after that. That's true of every song that you pick up. Sometimes you're lucky and like your singing of it will stay with somebody else for a long time and that gives it a bit more longevity, but like your own engagement with it, your own looking at it is as naught compared to the interiority of the song itself.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why I like having Debbie on the Old Songs podcast.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why I love doing podcasts. My children are sick hearing about it.
Do you talk to your kids about traditional songs?
Talk to my children about all sorts of things, yeah. But yeah, I do talk to them about traditional songs. When they were little, they used to like the stories.
And now they're just sick of it all.
I'm just like, oh my God. Romy says to me, well, you know, Mum, people that like that write music. And I was like, what, like people like me? And she was like, no, people who like make their own songs don't just use like other people's songs. Don't just use ones they found like in the kitchen drawer. Murdered in my own home by my own child. Savage crit from the children there, yeah. But they did used to like the stories when they were little. And now I have a new baby, so haha, in your face, children. The picture books of Tamlin are hers now.
My daughter corrects me. She'll hear me rehearsing. If I've got gigs coming up, I'll be in my room at the back of the house rehearsing. And she'll say to me, just like in that kind of pissed off teenage girl voice, she'll sort of be like, oh, by the way, you got this wrong. You got this wrong. Because she knows all the lyrics. You know, they're sponged into her head.
Oh, that's funny. Oh, I would be like, thanks for your feedback, Susan, but no. It's the folk process. It's not wrong, it's evolving.
Excellent. Have we got anything else that we need to say about this song?
I don't think so. I mean, I would really encourage people to go and listen to all the really great versions of it. The thing is that there's loads of really great versions of my wee corner of this song. And it's so extensive. It really is one for the heads, eh? Like, if you're interested in, like, the Folkways collection, is like, this is a classic example of the evolution of a piece of traditional music. I think that's super true. Like, it's got loads of geography, and it's a really good one for thinking about how you learn about traditional songs. But as well as the Steel Eye Span version, I would urge people to get into the Susan McEwan version from her 2005 album, Sweet Liberty, which is lush and very weird and kind of off kilter and not dissimilar to my version, actually, but I didn't hear it until after I'd made mine. Huge caveat. And then I heard it and I thought, oh, this is also very good. It seems I've duplicated some work here.
Don't tell your daughter.
I know, she'll be like, God's sake. 2005, Mum, do your research. Six jolly soldiers to carry my coffin. Six jolly soldiers to march by my side. Let each jolly soldier take a bunch of red roses, then for to smell them as we go along. Yeah, there's loads of great versions of When I Was on Horseback. The Mary Dorham version is obviously the best one. So good that nobody's bothered to change it since 1952.
There's a mark of quality.
Indeed.
Obviously, there are versions of the other one. I'm sure Martin Carthy must have done it. It's so hard to know which song we're talking about, isn't it? Because, I mean, even if you go to the fabulous website Mainly Norfolk,
it's got it listed under lots and lots and lots of different titles. Yeah.
It makes mention of Harry Cox, of course, mm-hmm. Martin Carthy, mm-hmm. Louis Killen, Laura Smith and Ted Kemp. Actually, I heard that in about 2017. They came and played at our local folk club. And that's beautiful as well. That's got a gorgeous melody.
She's great.
So many, just so many versions that you can go and explore. Ewan McColl, they've all had a go. Anything to tell us about Bird Ellen coming up?
Oh my God, so much.
Are you making a new album already?
I'm already thinking about it, actually. I've already sent the first tentative email. It's on my notes app. It's alive. Yeah, I mean, I have some nice ideas. It's all just like stream of consciousness on my notes app just now.
But before you record that new album, there is this current new album.
It is actually quite new. I'm like, bored. Let's move on. Yeah, it's called The Tarot of the Green Wood. And you can buy it from us on Bandcamp. On my new record label, Mavis Recordings. Mavis Recordings is open for business, by the way. If anybody's got any like weird folky stuff that they think everyone else will hate, definitely send it to me. hiya@mavisrecordings.com. Unless it's terrible. If it's terrible, then that's just hugely embarrassing for both of us. So, you know, be sure that it's good before you send it. Yeah, and we are going on tour. There will be an announcement about that on Friday. And also we're doing a special one-off gig in Glasgow on the winter solstice, the 21st of December, as part of the BFI Monsters season. We're doing a specially curated audio-visual set at Stereo in Glasgow on the theme of witches and hags. Hi. Hi, I'm both a witch and a hag. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Well, thank you, as always, for your time. It's always so fun to chat to you about this stuff.
Oh, thanks for having me on this great podcast. I absolutely love it. It's like total nerd Valhalla. It's the best.
Nerd Valhalla, that's going on my posters.
Do it.
So beat the drum slowly and play your fife lowly. Sound the dead march as you carry me along. And fire your bundocks right over my coffin. For I'm a young trooper cut down in me prime.
Many thanks again to Debbie Armour of Bird Ellen for her time and knowledge. And thanks also to the English Folk Dance and Song Society for their continued support. In this episode, you heard versions of Roud 2 from Mary Doran, Steel I Span. There was a version of Katie Krull performed by Bert Jansch, Beth Orton and Devendra Banhart. Then there was Martin Simpson, Bryony Griffith and Alice Jones. There was Louis Armstrong in there, a clip of the Watersons singing Adieu Adieu. There was Bird Ellen's own version, of course, of the song, known there as The Chariot. Then there was Susan McEwan, and also there was Laura Smith and Ted Kemp singing The Trooper Cut Down in His Prime. You heard that right at the end. And now, in the tradition of the Old Songs podcast, here's Debbie Armour singing an exclusive version of When I Was on Horseback, unaccompanied, of course, for your listening pleasure. I'll see you again in a week or two.
When I was on horseback, wasn't I pretty? When I was on horseback, wasn't I gay? And wasn't I pretty when I entered Cork City and met with my downfall on the 14th of May? 6 bonny soldiers to carry my coffin. 6 bonny soldiers to march by my side. And if 6 bonny soldiers take a bunch of red roses, then for to smell them as we go along. Play the pipe slowly, play the drum slowly, play up the death march as we go along. And if you bring me to Tipperary, you lay me down easy. I am a poor soldier that's never done wrong. I am a poor soldier that's never done wrong.